within this community and within this context where we see all these other shows that handle non-monogamy, at least I personally can feel this sense of a little bit of that compulsory sexuality pressure at work of feeling like, oh, if I'm not talking about kink or sex or group sex at the same level of frequency as these other people are, that must mean that I'm inherently sex negative.
Fascinating.
If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're thinking critically about sex positivity and sex negativity. These two terms get thrown around a lot in discussion, not just in recent years, but even for a while. But they're ideas that are a lot more nuanced and a lot more complex than I think most people think, especially the people, I would say, especially the people who tend to whip them out in arguments as just sort of like blanket statements they assume everyone else understands, usually is because they themselves don't understand quite the level of complexity that goes into these.
Yeah, and related to that, this is a huge topic that you've picked out here, Jace. Just going to say, this is a topic that's very complex. It's very far-reaching. All the different wide varieties and definitions of these two terms are often intertwined. So please bear with us. You know, if in the first 5 minutes of the episode we give a definition of like that really gets under your skin, trust me, we will probably go on to explain other definitions or why there's problems with that definition. So you don't need to like switch us off and throw your podcast machine across the room in a rage.
Wow.
unless that's going to bring you some joy today. But I guess don't call us up to pay for your crotch screen. Anyway, let's dive in.
So with that, we're going to start with some definitions. And again, as Dedeker said, this is a far-reaching topic. So I think when people think of sex positivity or negativity, just a blanket statement, they'll be like, oh, okay, well, one is automatically bad and one is automatically good. But we're here to kind of debunk that a little bit and go into reasons why there are potential problems with both. So first of all, we're going to talk about sex positivity. So this is a Carol Queen quote. Do we know who Carol Queen is?
She's a feminist writer.
Cool. Well, she has a quote on sex positivity, and here it is. It is the cultural philosophy that understands sexuality as a potentially positive force in one's life. And it can, of course, be contrasted with sex negativity, which sees sex as problematic, disruptive, and dangerous. Sex positivity allows for, and in fact celebrates, sexual diversity, differing desires, and relationship structures, and individual choices based on consent.
So I feel like, I mean, anecdotally, I think the sex positive movement is, like, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably familiar with the sex positive movement, I would imagine. I think it's something that came onto my radar, what, maybe beginning 5, 6, 7 years ago or so, I think for me personally.
It's interesting, though, historically, that the sex positivity movement actually goes back to 1920-something.
I know, that really surprised me. I was like, wow. Because definitely, I mean, as I started to become an adult and a young adult, that seemed to be the thing that people were really getting into and really talking about, especially when I moved to California. It became much more a thing that people were interested in and kind of wearing as an identity, like loud and proud, I am sex positive.
Yeah. Right. And so it was this thing that was kind of created in the 20s from a scientific point of view of being just sort of observing that sex in itself isn't this inherently shameful or bad or harmful thing. And that actually it was kind of more about like health benefits of having sex, and kind of looking at it more from kind of a scientific medical standpoint. And then it wasn't until the 60s, kind of during the free love movement, that sex positivity kind of actually started getting used and talked about a little bit more mainstream. And then, like Dedeker and Emily were saying, it's kind of more recently, I think largely because of, you know, poly communities and kink communities and stuff being able to get together more because of the internet, that has then kind of spread even more and become something that maybe more people have access to learning about, or at least have heard at some point, have heard someone talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that makes sense, though, as far as like the timing of that, because in the 20s, there was also a big like sexual revolution that I think we don't really talk about or even think about as having an impact. I think it's, we're like more likely flapper. To talk about, you know, like Gansky exactly era. Like the whole flapper thing.
Yeah.
Yes. It was around the time when it's like condoms started becoming widely available for people to use. And
I that did not
like
know that.
Really, yeah, like, you know, before, you know, hormonal birth control was a thing, like condoms were relatively revolutionary at that time of being actually accessible. So yeah, so like things definitely, something shook loose a little bit in the 20s. And so that does make sense that that would be the first time that, at least from a scientific perspective, someone's coming forward talking about these things.
We're coming up again on the 20s. What's going to happen then?
Whoa.
I'm excited.
Yeah. We got
a new revolution.
Need to like prohibit something again so we
oh,
can
yeah.
all.
Sounds good. Now let's.
Oh, geez. Well, don't hold your breath.
Yeah.
Oh,
oh boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So we wanted to kind of just, before we move on to some of the other definitions, kind of like, so what's this actually look like? Right. People tend to talk about it, kind of like Dedeker brought up, as being sort of a, well, I was going to say a positive thing. Sex positivity, but you know that it's kind of somehow morally superior, or that it's better, or that it's in contrast
it's
to something. It's more evolved, yeah. That it's in contrast to something that's more kind of limiting or
conservative,
yeah,
closed-minded.
Yeah. Tends to be associated with liberalism, right? So this, and that's not to say that that definition is wrong, or like that those connotations are wrong. It's just more nuanced than that. That's going to be, we're just going to say that like 100 times this episode.
So that you don't throw your podcast yeah. machine in the trash.
So what this means is things like doing the work to accept your own sexual identity or your own sexual desires, that because you might want sex or because you might want a certain type of sex doesn't mean that you're bad or that you're wrong, that's okay, right? So this is definitely related to, obviously, sexual identity, of like, well, it doesn't matter who you're attracted to, like, that's okay, right? Or just the fact that you want to have sex at all doesn't mean that you're somehow slutty or less of a person or less valuable, right? That's kind of one of those core messages people want to get across with sex positivity.
Yeah, it may also mean, you know, choosing to communicate about sex openly and proactively. So instead of carrying like shame and secrecy around the way, or, you know, avoiding talking about sex, especially, you know, talking about sex with the person that you're having sex with, it may be, you know, kind of doing the work to let go of some of that shame and some of that negativity so that you can have these very open, proactive, mature conversations around sex in general.
It can also look like calling for an end to things like slut shaming, even rape culture. It can get, you know, very big and intense on that as well. I mean, gosh, I think about how when I was my like second or third partner that I ever had in my life called me promiscuous because at the age of like 20, I had already slept with 3 people. I just, yeah.
Well,
but, you know, it is that idea of like, oh, you know, well, you're promiscuous, you're a slut because of X, Y,
did
and Z
he,
thing.
Did yeah. he sing that Nelly Furtado song to you?
Which
promiscuous
one?
Girl?
That
promiscuous
oh.
girl.
Promiscuous girl,
of course.
Wait, Nelly Furtado sang that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Didn't she also do I'm Like a Bird?
Yes.
What does that have to do with anything?
I don't know. They just seem like completely different people there, but okay, never mind. Yeah.
It was kind of later.
It was later in her career.
Well,
she
I mean,
did the indie
yeah.
shit,
later.
And then she did the, like, not indie shit.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. Well, yes. So those things can also be a part of sex positivity.
Well, I think part of what, like, to go off of what you were just saying, Emily, is that calling someone promiscuous, that's a bad thing. Right? This is something that comes up a
it
lot
felt
in like
bad.
Oh, of
yeah.
course. No, and that's and he meant it as a bad thing.
Yeah, dick.
yeah.
Jeez.
But like in like when you listen to people like Dr. Christopher Ryan talk about sexuality and humans potentially being not monogamous by nature, one of the things that comes up in that research is talking about humans or other animals as being promiscuous as more of just a statement of fact of like they have sex with multiple people and that it's not, you know, just this exclusive pair bonding thing. And it's not something that's only done for procreation.
I see. So that word can mean different things, but often when like people, again, they qualify like promiscuous as like, this is not a good thing. This is a bad thing.
Yeah. So, yeah. Like we have that connotation with
absolutely.
It.
Well, I feel like that's been kind of what's driven the movements that we saw a few years ago of like reclaiming the word slut, for instance, you know, of like, yeah, this is a word that's been used with this very, very negative connotation, but part of the sex positivity like movement is going to be to reclaim this word and be like, yeah, being a slut is okay. Having sex with a lot of people is okay. Or honestly, even just having sex with more than one person is okay. Or just wanting sex at all is okay. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of what was behind reclaiming the word slut, which I think, I mean, understandably, people have mixed feelings about, I definitely have mixed feelings about, you know, reclamation of certain words, but that's not what this topic is about today.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, yeah. And there are a lot of other ways in which these things for sex positivity can be applied in real life. But definitely, if you want to look up more, if you want to be like, am I doing this thing? Then you can Google that shit for sure.
Then you will find a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So something that we did want to acknowledge here before we move on to talking about definitions of sex negativity is we wanted to acknowledge sex moralism.
Which and, I was like, what is that?
Right. Well, we've talked about it on this show in the past as meaning kind of giving a moral judgment to sex of being bad to sort of differentiate that from some of the sex negativity we're going to talk about later. But actually, in researching this episode, it's really that sex moralism is kind of a whole field of sexual ethics and sort of a whole study of ethics as it relates to human sexuality and sexual behavior. So sexual moralism isn't exactly the way we've used that term before. It is kind of more this like field of study. And there's actually, if you look it up, there are some really interesting, very heady, somewhat dense articles out there on this topic, but that actually are pretty interesting. But we did just kind of want to acknowledge that fact that we'd sort of used that term to mean something a little bit different before, but that it is actually sort of a whole field of ethics and philosophy, I guess.
Yeah.
Would you call them sex thicks?
Wow.
I was going to say I wouldn't, but I actually probably would. So let's be honest.
Yeah, let's be honest.
I only made that joke because you didn't make that joke first.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you, Deniker. You know him so well.
You're a little slow on the uptick on that one.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't think of it.
No, I would. Yeah.
No, I think, I mean, ethics in general is already just such a deep topic. And if we go into the nuances of relationship ethics and sexual ethics or sex ethics as well, there is definitely a wealth of knowledge. But yeah, we just kind of wanted to throw a bone here because sometimes sex moralism gets tossed into this debate also as a label, like especially labeling someone as being like sex moralistic, like maybe someone who places a value judgment on whether sex is good or bad. Which is a little bit separate from, I think, the actual like study and analytical discussion of sexual morals.
Well, can I ask, like, when we were researching this, you sent out the article regarding sexual moralism and religion. And so, like, how do those two go hand in hand? It is just that question of whether or not, like, it is a moral thing to desire sex and to have it outside of a procreative, you know, means or opportunity or whatever.
Well, that's why this is so fascinating is that that's not the question. That's sort of part of a lot of the questions about it. And this isn't, so I guess I wanted to point it out that it's not something like sex positivity is the opposite of sex moralism, which is religious. Like that, it's really not that at all. Like religion and sex moralism are intertwined just because like ethics and morality and religion are intertwined with each other. And those discussions will often overlap with people who are religious, at least. But even within that world of people, of religious people talking about sexual ethics, There's still a huge variety and levels of subtlety and stuff like this article that you were talking about that we're not going to go into in depth on this episode, but was posted on thegospelcoalition.org. But it goes into talking about things like the ethics of the importance of consent or the ethics of the importance of allowing people to express their own sexuality and gender identity and our responsibility to acknowledge and affirm that identity, which, you know, you think on a site called thegospelcoalition.org, you might not expect to sort of view to be the one that's being mentioned here, right? And this is just one particular article, but I guess that's just an example of what an interesting field it is and how there is a very interesting discussion to be had there that does tie it into religion.
Yeah. Thanks for making that statement, because it was interesting to me, but I did want to touch on it briefly, so I appreciate you talking
about
it.
Well, we're going to touch on it some more.
Cool.
Because... this kind of leads us to the next thing, which is talking about sex negativity, or at least kind of the common definition of sex negativity. And so generally, I think when people use the term sex negativity, or when you read the term sex negativity, usually it refers to a mindset that sex itself is inherently dirty, or dangerous, or risky, or pathological, or deviant, or just bad in some way, inherently negative. Certain kinds of sex are seen as normal and acceptable, such as heterosexual sex, procreative sex, monogamous sex, vanilla sex, and it stands in contrast with other types of sex that are seen as not normal, as deviant, as bad, like kinky sex, or sex outside of a marriage, or group sex, or sex with multiple people, or things like that. So that's kind of the general take on sex negativity. I know in my own life, where the reason why I'm bringing the religion thing up again is because for me, it very much overlaps that, like, I was raised in an evangelical Christian household. And so that meant that, like, Christian, quote unquote, morals around sex were applied, and Christian, quote unquote, morals around sex tended to be pretty sex negative in the sense of, like, sex is a, like, yes, sex is a thing, people do it, it's great, but only if you do it in this particular way, and any way outside of that is very clearly impure and sinful and wrong and to be avoided at all costs.
Yeah, I think before getting into kind of the, like, minutiae or just nuance of what sex negativity can mean, that is definitely, like, what I thought of when I thought of a sex negative person, someone who potentially was uber religious and very traditional in their values of sex and what it looked like. But besides that, I mean, sex negativity can come up in real life in a lot of ways that aren't necessarily so, like, you know, this person is a sex negative person, but they can definitely do things that are sex negative. One of those things, for example, is slut shaming. And again, kind of what we just talked about with that guy telling me that I was promiscuous or a slut because I had slept with three people. God forbid. Yeah.
Yeah. Or on the other side of that is carrying around a lot of shame or probably because of that, a lot of secrecy about your own sexual desires or about the fact that you've had sex at all, things like that. I know that's something, like, in my life, again, like, also being raised religiously, definitely have struggled with a lot of that for a long time. It's sort of been a long process. It wasn't just a binary, like, okay, all of a sudden I stopped thinking those things. It kind of sticks with you, like, this sort of guilt for having certain desires that seem not normal. Yeah. Even as your definition of normal changes, they're still like, well, anything not normal is, like, that's a deviant thing, that's a bad thing, that's, you know, something I should be ashamed of.
Yeah, and in a similar fashion, obviously shaming others for their sexuality or for being a sexual being, which I think kind of goes along with slut shaming, just if a woman is promiscuous or if whomever is promiscuous, then automatically that's a bad thing in some people's mind and that they should be shamed or punished for it.
And something I want to point out, and we will get more into the weeds of this a little bit later as we start to get more into the criticism of all these things, of sex positivity and sex negativity and all these things, but that people who have a lot of sex can still be very sex negative, and people who don't have any sex can still be very positive around sex and sexuality. So I just want to put it out there. Again, we'll start to dive more into that a little bit later. But I mean, I definitely learned very early on, and honestly, particularly in like a number of men that I've dated, have found that like, just that like, even if you have a lot of sex, you can still carry a lot of shame around your own sexuality. You can still carry a lot of shame around your own sexual desires. You can still do a lot of shaming of other people's mm-hmm. sexual activity, even if you're someone who like, quote unquote, embraces having sex a lot.
Yeah, definitely. I also just wanted to point out too, that this sort of sex negativity that we're talking about now, like this type of definition, also applies to things like the accusations that I feel like we heard a lot more of this kind of talk like in the 90s, but of like someone getting HIV or AIDS and being like, well, they deserved it because they were being immoral, they were being deviant, right? Or like, this is God's punishment for promiscuity, right? Mm. Or on the other hand, well, I guess just that, like, sort of the accusation people even get today, if they're polyamorous or non-monogamous, if you ever have a breakup, there's that like, well, obviously it's because of this, right? Obviously any problem you have is because you're doing this shameful thing that we shouldn't be so willy-nilly with. We shouldn't be so free with this thing.
I mean, I think we still get that in all of the discussions around like STI stigma, and mm-hmm. also in discussing unwanted pregnancies. Like, there's still very much this strong narrative of like, well, if you didn't want to catch an STI or if you didn't want to get pregnant, like, you shouldn't have had sex in the first place, and therefore you deserve it.
Yeah. A equals B, and that's it. Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, anyone who's even been remotely on the fringes of this kind of world understands these kind of more, quote unquote, textbook definitions of sex positivity and sex negativity. However, specifically with the term sex negativity, this is not the only way that this term is used. And that brings us to talking about sex negative feminism. And now, personally, I think for many years, when I just heard about the idea of sex negative feminism, I really just kind of mentally threw it in the garbage, honestly, because I was so conditioned to be like, oh, sex negativity, that's bad. Okay, so that means whatever version of sex negative feminism, that's not for me. So I'm just going to completely disregard it. And I went that way for several years, like not even thinking about that, not even analyzing it, until honestly, like maybe 6 months to a year ago, I read someone's blog post where they kind of laid out very clearly what sex negative feminism is. And for the first time in my life, I was like, oh my God, this makes total perfect sense. So I have a quote here from Christine Rivas, who says that even sex negative feminists, they tend to use the term as an identifier rather than as a representation of their values. Rather, sex negative feminists would be more accurately called sex critical feminists. So as in this idea that, and where I think discussions about sex negative feminism tends to get derailed, is because of the same assumptions that I made, which is like, oh, if you're talking about sex negativity, you're talking about all these terrible things we just talked about being shameful or slut shaming or being conservative, and therefore it's not even worthy of discussion. But in a nutshell, you know, sex negative feminism or sex critical feminism just kind of like criticizes this idea that if it's sex, it's inherently good, which is sometimes a takeaway that people get from the sex positivity movement, is this idea of like sex, as long as it's consensual and as long as it's healthy, whatever that means, that must mean that it's good. And that kind of paints it with this really broad brush and really ignores the context that some sex happens in, as in a context where sometimes it's not that easy to get consent, or where sometimes it's like there's still like power dynamics involved, or where it's like, even though there is consent, it doesn't necessarily mean that the sex is good, you know, or is like a positive, uplifting thing. So we kind of need to dive into that too, is this idea that like there is this sex, quote unquote, sex negativity that also refers to being critical of sex from a feminist perspective.
Yeah, and like, it's interesting, in some of the stuff we were reading for this episode, of people mentioning, like, well, part of the reason for using the term sex negativity instead of something else, like sex negative feminism, is because it does get attention.
Yeah.
Right? It does get that, like, what? Mm-hmm. What are you talking about?
This seems like an oxymoron.
Yeah. Yeah. But I do think it's interesting, though, that that quote that Dedeker read there, that it's not meant to be a representation of their values. It's not like I'm judging sex to be negative. It's more just like, hey, I'm not so sure about everything that's getting said within sex positivity. Let's pump the brakes here and let's look at this a little more critically. So I actually do really like sex critical as kind of a better way of describing that, maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For example, one thing that is brought up in some of the articles about it is this idea of compulsory sexuality. The idea that within sex positivity, which grew out of this backlash against being shamed for sex or being told you're not allowed to want it and be a good person, or you're not allowed to have it and be a good person. As a response to that, sex positivity and sex positive communities can be kind of all the way on the other side of, like, you have to be having sex. Like, the more sex you're having, the more positive value you carry within that community, the more, like, a real, you know, sex positive person you can claim to be if you're having more sex, which in itself is really devaluing people who are, for example, asexual, or maybe just for whatever preference of their own, don't want to be having a lot of sex. And so there can kind of end up on the flip side, this thing of actually, you know, disenfranchising or hurting or kind of leaving out or even shaming people who don't want to have sex or just don't have a drive for that.
Yeah.
Well, if we can get this into a little bit of a meta discussion, I know we've had, so on this show, we don't talk about sex a ton. Mm-hmm. Like we do, like, of course we acknowledge it, but like we don't, I think compared to a lot of other podcasts that handle the topic of non-monogamy or polyamory, often they tend to be a lot more kink focused, or their imagery tends to be a lot more kink focused, or there tend to be a lot of shows out there that are just swapping stories of these threesomes or group sex nights that we had and what was that like. And that's never really been our show. And I know privately, the three of us have had discussions around, like, are we sex negative? Are we are we secretly sex negative? Are we like all repressed about our sexuality? And that's why we don't talk about it a lot or don't want to share these, you know, these sordid tales on the show. And I, you know, upon examining it, like, I don't think any of us are sex negative in the way we first described, as in like being really repressive and secret and shameful about sex, because all three of us are having sex and having a good time. And pretty okay with our sexualities and how those are shaping up. However, I do feel that within this community and within this context where we see all these other shows that handle non-monogamy, at least I personally can feel this sense of a little bit of that compulsory sexuality pressure at work of feeling like, oh, if I'm not talking about kink or sex or group sex at the same level of frequency as these other people are, that must mean that I'm inherently sex negative.
Fascinating.
And that there's a negative, like, value judgment that goes with that.
Yeah.
Which is kind of exactly what we're talking about, right? Where it's like, it's flipped all the way back around.
Yeah, totally.
Where now, like, if you're not doing those things, there is kind of this negative, like, value judgment on you as a person. Like, you're not, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know
I think I've also come up against, even just in my personal life, sometimes I've come up against this idea that if you don't want to dive into sharing like all the juicy details of your last hookup, like, if you don't get joy from those kind of conversations, then it must be because you're repressed in some way.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, hadn't thought about it that way specifically.
Which sometimes, I mean, of course, it creates a mind trip for me, because sometimes I'm like, am I repressed? Is this all my sex negative Christian upbringing that's causing this? But then sometimes I'm like, no, I don't think so. I just kind of like to be private, and I also don't have that exciting of stories at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's like, nobody will care. It's pretty normal. Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, vanilla doesn't necessarily mean, or more vanilla or whatever, doesn't necessarily mean that one is sex negative. So in moving along and looking at these critical things about the sex positivity movement, which I think is something that sex negative feminism does. It's looking at patriarchy and how patriarchy still shows up in the bedroom in a lot of ways, even if it is consensual sex. And also that it's not that patriarchy can show up even in non-heterosexual relationships. So people often will ask, and I know in my youth I have done this, and even if it's just like being cheeky or whatever and being cute, but ask my friends who are homosexual, say like, oh, well, who's the man and who's the woman in the relationship? And I know like this automatically is an assumption of one person having like the upper hand and someone having the power in the relationship and the other person, you know, not having that, which obviously perpetuates this idea of, I think, sort of toxic patriarchy in a lot of ways. And that is something to address and look at for sure within the question of the sex positive movement, like something just to be aware of at the very least, that this is something that people will automatically maybe assume or ask that question or think about, or not even like realize, like obviously patriarchy is coming up still in consensual relationships.
I want to talk briefly about what that can look like, because I feel like this is something that hasn't even really come onto my radar until the last couple of years or so that I started thinking about my own sex life in this way of realizing like, hey, there is still kind of this backdrop of
power
patriarchy
play.
And other hierarchies going on, even when I'm having 100% consensual sex. And it can be things that seem relatively harmless, but are still patriarchy at play. I think, for instance, like you can still be having consensual, very pleasurable sex, but still operating under this assumption that like sex is always done when the man is done, you know, like, and that's like, that's just something that you can just fall into, you know, or I know for myself, you know, things that I internalized about the ways I had to look or the ways my body had to move to ensure that sex was pleasurable for the guy, you know, even if the sex was pleasurable for me, even if it was consensual, but it's like still feeling this pressure of like, I need to perform in certain ways or else like my value as a partner is going to go down the toilet or whatever.
Even just the idea that like, that your value is placed upon whether or not your partner wants to have sex with you. Because I definitely get in moments of being like, well, my partner doesn't seem interested in sex, or they haven't been interested in sex for like a week or a number of weeks. And that automatically means that my value as a partner must have gone down just simply because they're not showing the kind of interest in me as a sexual creature that I feel that they must need in order to like see me as a valuable partner.
Yeah. Oh, and I just to hop on that, that's so interesting because it's like you could look at that and be like, oh, well, like Emily is so sex positive that like sex itself is this positive thing. And so therefore, when there's an absence of sex, then there's like a problem, you know? And so that feels like that can be like a weird kind of.
But it's far more nuanced than that.
Yeah.
It's like, why does my worth have to be whether or not I am desired as a sexual creature? Like that, ultimately, like my desire as a, or my worth as a human is so much more than that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this also ropes in ideas around consent because again, I mean, consent in itself, also this huge topic that now has become like so prolific and there's so many people talking about it and it's great. But it also is kind of intertwined with sex positivity and sex negativity in a way that, again, and I'm sorry to keep using this word that is nuanced and complex and isn't just this black and white thing. And there's kind of this idea that like consent itself, you know, we've seen all the like making asking for consent sexy or like asking for consent is this really sexy thing that maybe it shouldn't necessarily be deemed as a sexy thing. Like maybe your partner asking for consent shouldn't be something that's super exciting to you. Rather, it should just automatically be part of the conversation. Like it's not, you know, it's not this inherently good or bad thing. I know I've experienced this. I know I've talked to some other like patrons in our Patreon group about this phenomenon, but like I want to say like over a year ago, the last time I was in a situation where I was like facing the possibility of having sex with someone new, and the fact that this person did not at all pressure me for sex, like before I was ready, like it wasn't even put on the table, like I didn't even have to like say no or anything. At that time I was like so bowled over. I was like, wow, this is so amazing. And then also like the next time that like it was, you know, this person was really good at asking for consent and being really on top of it and like really, you know, being very aware. And I was just again so bowled over, like, oh my God, this is so amazing and it's so wonderful and it's so great. And it took me a few months to realize like, okay, that was great, but shouldn't be like this person wins 5,000 points because they asked for consent. You know, I shouldn't be wanting to like sing this person's praises because they didn't pressure me for sex. Like, this should be a freaking normal thing. It shouldn't be just something that gets this value judgment attached to it of like, oh, if you ask for consent, that's just so much sexier and you're such a better person. It's just like, no, this should just be the base level, you know? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think also things start to get a little bit complex because the fact that like sometimes people are in a situation where they're not able to have the consent conversation, either someone who doesn't even have the language for it, or there's no inroads in the relationship. You know, like if you've been in a monogamous relationship or a married relationship where it's like the consent conversation was never even broached in the first place. It was just this context of like, you're married or you're monogamous, and so, you know, you sex kind of happens. Own each other sexually. Yeah. And sex just happens. And so can we then look at that sex and be like, oh, that sex is inherently bad because you haven't navigated consent because of the context that you're in? Or does that mean the sex can never be pleasurable?
Yeah, I thought this was one of the most interesting things when we were researching this episode compared to when we've had conversations about this on the show in the past, was this one, was kind of pointing out that if sex positivity is saying that like sex is a good thing as long as it's X, Y, and Z, right? Like as long as it's, you know, consensual between adults, you know, free will, whatever, right? It's like, if it's those things, then it's good. Carries with it this kind of meaning that like, well, if it's not those things, then it's bad. Mm. And that while I think we would all agree that everyone should be able to have consent, and taking that away from anyone or not giving that to someone is a bad thing. But if you're just going to say blanket, like any sex that's not that is like a bad or like less valuable thing. Say you take the example of someone who has been, she was married for 20 years in a monogamous relationship where like sex was the expectation. She didn't really have the chance to consent to that. But she enjoyed it some of the time, maybe a lot of the time, right? Maybe she enjoyed it, but it wasn't consensual. That within the world of sex positivity and the way people talk about sex, that person could end up feeling like, okay, so all of that pleasure that I had is not valid. It's somehow less valuable because I didn't consent to it. So again, it's like not trying to paint with this big broad brush, like not making this so clear cut black and white, like if it follows these rules, it's therefore good. And if it doesn't, it's bad or it's less valuable. It's kind of acknowledging the fact that there's a lot more dynamics at play here. Like all the stuff that both of you have brought up here, like there's a lot more subtlety involved and you can't just kind of go, here's the rules. And as long as you follow those, everything's great. And if you don't do any of these, then it's inherently bad.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMale.com and EvesToys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store, and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMail.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I at AdamandEve.com, AdamMail.com, or EvesToys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I.
Okay, so we've talked about this a little bit before, but I do think that there is this kind of automatic assumption that like liberal-minded people out there, progressive people, are just automatically sex positive. And then again, on the flip side, sex negative people are going to be those who are maybe more conservative, more closed-minded. But again, as we've been saying this entire time, it really does go a little bit more nuanced than that, a little bit more intricate into like what actually these things mean, because one doesn't necessarily equal the other by any means.
Yeah, and I feel like, to be totally honest, over the course of the last few years, on my Twitter bio, I have put hashtag sex positive and then removed hashtag sex positive like three times, at least like, three times. I've gone back and forth.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I think because of these conversations and because this is something that I think about a lot and it moves through me a lot for some reason. And because, again, like, I think that it's basically there's not a hashtag short enough to fit into my Twitter bio that would actually explain how I feel. And I think that's hard. That's why it's so frustrating. It's because,
yeah,
exactly, where I'm like hashtag sex positive, except I don't think that all sex is all totally good. And like, sometimes I like to be critical of sex as well, because like I you know, feminism, and I want to examine the patriarchy. And then like, but sometimes I feel sex negative and I'm still kind of divorcing that out of my system. And I don't even know what my sexuality is.
Hashtag.
And it's like by the time I've done that, like there's no more characters left in my bio. And so I can't.
Your whole bio is just one really long hashtag.
And people are like trying to decipher what it says. I love it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I mean, we've talked a lot about like, you know, being sex critical. And I do want to spend a little bit more time talking about, I'll just at least open up with talking about, for me, the thing that always motivates me to take sex positive off of my bio during the times that I do. And it is that, like, I think, as we've said, painting things with a broad brush and just being really totalitarian with sex positivity really doesn't serve everyone. And it really doesn't allow for the full picture and the full spectrum of the conversation, I feel. At least those are the things that I'm feeling during the times that I take that off my bio and I'm like, fuck this.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And a lot of times, I think a lot of people look at sex positivity and they think of it as like, well, this is a broad spectrum. Everyone should be this. But they're not taking into account those who are not necessarily privileged in certain ways. I know that one of the articles that we read brought up those who were born maybe without a clitoris, for example, or for those who, again, like Jay said, who are asexual, who choose not to be sexual, it can be alienating to them. Just this idea of sex positivity, again, that if you're not this, then you're a bad person or you're not progressive in some way.
Yeah, well, that's also wrapped up in this narrative of sex positivity automatically equaling empowerment. Usually it's packaged as empowerment for women. And again, where it's like, you know, well, how is that measured? You know, some people measure it in the sense of like, it's the number of orgasms you're able to get from your partner or give to yourself. And if you don't orgasm in this particular way, then it's hard to measure by that particular metric. Or the fact that historically, as we've seen, you know, people that aren't necessarily cisgender or white tend to be much receive much heavier punishment and backlash for being openly sexual, yeah. or they're more likely to have their sexual expression linked to their sexual identity or gender identity or racial identity, more so than like a white person might have. And yeah. so just kind
that
of
goes along wholeheartedly, with the privilege question.
Yeah, exactly. So just kind of wholeheartedly saying like sex positivity is something that everyone needs to ascribe to doesn't really actually take into account the wide variety of experience coming into this.
It's like kind of a similar discussion to talking about being out, either about, you know, being gay or pansexual or something, or being polyamorous.
Yeah.
It's this like, well, it's one thing to just go, well, I did it and everyone should do it because then the world's a better place, and not to take into account that not everyone has the same amount of safety or security that you do. Like, the consequences aren't even for everybody.
No.
And I think that that the sex positivity community can kind of fall into this where it's like, whatever, like, who cares what people think? Like, we're just going to reclaim this aspect of our lives.
Just do you.
And that's not as realistic an option or as safe an option for everyone.
Yeah. It can be more intersectional as well. Like, people have to take into account we're going to throw that word out there again, but the nuance of it all, and that someone, you know, a trans woman of color might not feel comfortable in certain arenas as like a white woman would, and saying like, well, I don't know if I want sex in X, Y, or Z way. I may not feel comfortable in X, Y, and Z way because someone who has a certain amount of privilege that I don't have would automatically just feel super comfortable in ways that I don't.
Well, I think it's especially like if you have any kind of identity that already tends to be hypersexualized by other people, and that's pretty much, it can be anything. Like, it can be, you know, women of color. It can be people who are trans. It can be people who are gay. Like, it can be, it's basically, we've seen a history of anything that's even remotely been considered to be sexually deviant often gets hypersexualized, either in a fetishistic way or in a very negative way. And I've definitely seen in my own life, because of being in non-monogamous relationships and polyamorous relationships for a long time, at least the way I tend to feel personally is like, well, people are already assuming I'm some sort of weird hypersexual nymphomaniac. And so that means I don't feel comfortable sharing, like, just so casually talking about like the hookup I had last weekend or the group sex event I went to, because I'm like, now I'm playing into everyone's stereotypes and they're just like even more afraid of me than they were before. And like, that's also my experience as, you know, being a relatively privileged person, you know, that even just that little sliver makes it uncomfortable for me to talk about that and to like be, I guess, what a lot of people consider to be demonstrably sex positive, I suppose.
Yeah. Another criticism that comes up about sex positivity, or I guess maybe not even a criticism, but something worth discussing, is how are men involved? And this comes up in a number of ways. One is that a lot of times within sex positivity, it can be talked about as if, well, kind of men aren't even part of this conversation because they're all sort of sex positive by nature because men are more sexual than women.
That's a big overarching statement.
Right. And one that's scientifically been shown not to be true.
Yeah, yeah.
But that is this cultural belief that we're taught, right? And so there is sometimes a criticism of the way that sex positivity is talked about is kind of ignoring a huge part of the conversation. Like, it's kind of buying into this idea that sex is a gendered thing and it can tend to sort of reinforce a gender binary even. And I guess sort of there's like multiple directions I could go from here, but like kind of one of them is what you were talking about before of that sort of treating women like a sexual object and that's where their value comes from. And so if your partner doesn't want to have sex with you, you're somehow less valuable or something's wrong with you.
Yeah.
Then on the other side of that, there's this other thing where like, well, we're not even going to talk about men because we all know that they want to have sex all the time.
Which is also like, yeah, feeding that idea that people's worth is how much they want to have sex. Or if you're a guy, I don't know, that like if you're having a bunch of sex, then all of a sudden you are more worthy. or you right. are better.
It's very much tied into your own self-worth about yeah. how much sex you're having, or at least we're told that. And then also, if you don't want to be having sex as much, if you either have a lower sex drive or are more demisexual or asexual, or perhaps you know, have had some trauma in your past or something that make you not want to just like get as much sex as possible, that there's also kind of this devaluing that can go along with that, and this sort of I guess pressure to be more normal, which I actually think can lead to a lot of bad behaviors. You know, it actually kind of contributes to this culture that doesn't value consent as much, because we're sort of operating on these assumptions about people. We're like, again, we're painting with these broad brushes. We're not realizing that there is a lot of nuance here to each individual's experience. So that's also a criticism that gets brought up a lot, of just kind of like, well, the way sex positivity can be talked about sometimes isn't involving the whole conversation.
I was just going to say, I think we're allowed to use the word nuance one more time in this episode.
Only one. That's it. Only one.
And that's it. That's it. And I won't even take it. I'll let it just float around for either of the two of you to take it.
Okay.
Well, but here's a question that I think, you know, needs to come up. Is it possible to have an idea or carry this idea of sex neutrality? Like, is that a definition that needs to be written? Is it even a thing that could possibly exist?
Yeah, and I expected like there to be some sort of research or something done on this, but
it doesn't exist.
Exactly. We didn't seem to find any. So I don't know. I think I like the definition of like being sex critical of sex, critical of the way that sex is presented to our culture, especially the American culture, one that is, I think, puritanical in many ways, and obviously like highly patriarchal in many ways still, and just looking at everything critically with a critical eye.
Well, so that's the thing. So then I did think maybe I put hashtag sex critical.
Ooh, I like that.
In all my bios.
Do it.
And at first I was like, well, I don't know how I feel about that, because I get this image of me like in the bedroom with my partner with a clipboard and giving just a lot of criticism, which doesn't sound very sexy.
Oh,
but then sometimes I'm like, but to be fair, like those are kind of the thoughts that go through my head sometimes, is wanting to kind of step back and like take a look at what's going on here sexually, and how do I feel about it, and what are the good parts and the bad parts, and I don't know.
Well, attaching a critical eye to most things, I think, is probably good. Not that I want to say that anything is necessarily good or bad, but I appreciate the thought.
I was kind of into the clipboard idea until it started being about criticism. And then...
critical doesn't necessarily mean criticism.
Yeah, well, then she said criticism specifically.
Okay.
But no, yeah,
I mean, like I'm Masters of Sex, that TV
right, that's
show.
Kinda, I guess, yeah.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah, yeah.
Like, let's
if you want
really
me to bring
analyze.
A clipboard into the bedroom, Jace, I won't kink shame you.
I know, right?
I won't be like, sex negative in that way.
Yeah, right. This is what's going to happen now. We're never going to hear about it because we don't talk about sex on this show. I'm kidding. But, yeah.
Hey, if there's some steamy clipboard stories that come out as the result of this episode...
You're right. That's a bonus episode waiting
share.
To happen.
Maybe, yeah, that'll probably be some bonus content.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
That's interesting. I'm thinking about this idea of like sex neutrality or sex critical. It's interesting. I guess kind of what it's bringing me back to is, I guess what I think is important to take away from this episode, and something that was interesting in reading some of these people's stories, particularly people who identify as sex negative feminists, talked about how passionate the like hatred and vitriol toward them from sex positive people is.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
Is sometimes, at least. And I think that's kind of the key here to take away, is it's not a question of like, well, what's better? Is it sex positivity or sex negativity? Who's right? That's the whole point, is that when you get like, when you look at people in their writings about it, you'll get people who talk about sex positivity in a way that very much acknowledges the concerns of sex negative feminists. And you'll have people talking about sex negativity in a way that would sound very sex positive to most people if it didn't have that sex negative label attached to it. It's more just kind of a way of bringing attention to the fact that, like, hey, this isn't so easy. This isn't something that we can just be like, well, society's rules are wrong, so here's the new rules, and as long as you follow these, everything's fine. And everything that doesn't is bad. That it's kind of bringing attention to that and be like, no, there's more conversation to be had here.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's, I mean, and I do appreciate that. It doesn't mean, at least for me, I feel like my personal takeaway is that it doesn't mean throwing away the concept of sex positivity and just being like, well, that's bad now. because I right. think as a culture, it, and for people individually as well, it is really important to at least have that concept exist. Because I think for a lot of people, even just the concept of sex positivity as we know it is still new to some people. And even coming across that concept is going to be really illuminating and possibly life-changing. I know it certainly was for me. And so it's kind of like these things build upon each other, and it's not quite so easy to just take one thing and kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater, as it were.
And speaking of babies, I will say, not necessarily that any of us are going to have any, but in looking to the future, again, this critical eye of what sex positivity, sex negative feminism, and all of these things look like, I think it's important to continue like bringing that to the masses, those ideas to the next generation of people that are going to be being brought up by those who are our age, for example, and something to think about when talking to them about sex in general, and maybe changing the narrative of what our culture, what the three of us really grew up with, which I think still was very much along the lines, even me. Even someone who was not raised at all religious, but I still think that I was raised with this idea that, like, well, really only have sex with someone that you're really in love with, or really only have sex with someone, you know, if you're ready for it, if you, you know, can handle it, I don't know, and don't talk about it, don't masturbate, don't think about it too much, you know, all of those things. And I think that that narrative from the beginning can be changed and be thought of in a much more productive manner.
Yeah. So I think ultimately what we would want to impart to the people listening is that as much as human beings love definitions and labels and very clear black and white things, there doesn't exist a single definition or label or rule or formula that's going to make it okay to not think critically about things, or to not examine things, or to not analyze things. I think that's kind of what we've learned here, is that that's why it's important to know that, like, when you say sex positive or sex negative, it doesn't mean just these two black and white things. It doesn't mean just this one good thing and this one bad thing. It's a lot more expansive. And that's okay. That's actually a good thing. It's actually good to have something that's expansive and that does make you think about things and weigh up pros and cons and think about different situations. Even though maybe it feels like it's harder because we can't just like put a label on something very easy and then be done. yeah, it is actually a good thing to have these things that generate more debate, discussion, and thinking critically about things.
Hashtag nuance.
There it was.
There you
that
go.
Was the last
Done.
One.
Okay.
Listen, even before you wrote you. It, I was going to say it. Thank you for like just being on the same page as me. You said that you were allowed to put one more in there, and then Dedeker herself crossed it out.
I crossed it out. Okay, I crossed it out to save
maybe,
it for
hang
the
on,
finale.
But maybe that's what I put in my Twitter bio. Is hashtag nuance.
Oh, I like
sex.
That.
Sex nuance.
Sex nuance.
Watch, you're going to create a movement, Dedeker? You're going
to
have to
I really don't want to be responsible for a movement.
For the sex nuance movement. Okay, well, let's take her home.
Yeah,
shall we?
So we would love to hear from you. We want to know, was this the first time you'd heard this other definition of sex negativity? Is that something you've heard of before? Is it something you identify with? What about sex positivity? What's your relationship been with that? And of course, if you are a theologian or a philosopher who writes about sex moralism, I would love to talk to you more about that because I find it super fascinating. And the best place that you can share your thoughts with other listeners is on this episode's discussion thread in our private Facebook group or our Discord chat. You can get access to these groups and join our exclusive community by going to patreon.com/multiamory. In addition, you can share with us publicly. Join the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can email us at info@multiamory.com. Leave us a voicemail at 678-MULTI-05. Or you can leave us a voice message on Facebook. Multiamory is created and produced by Dedeker Winston, Emily Matlack, and me, Jace Lindgren. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio Balvanera. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.